Welcome to the Driving Eureka podcast, where we share ideas and advice for helping you find, filter, and fast track big ideas. Let's go! Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, advisor to global organizations on the Deming philosophy and host of the Deming Institute podcast.
And I'm Doug Hall, inventor, speaker, teacher, and whiskey maker. I'm also the founder of the Eureka Ranch and author of the Driving Eureka book.
This is episode 29 of the Driving Eureka podcast, and we're going to do a couple of special episodes where we're going to basically apply some of the things that we've been talking about the last 28 episodes. You know, Doug has been talking about his distillery, and I don't have millions of dollars to spend in order to build my own whiskey company, but I think some of the things he's been talking about make sense to me, that it's kind of financially, makes it more financially capable for someone like me to get into this business, and I want to learn how do you do it. And so the next two episodes, we're going to kind of walk through how to do it. And from my standpoint, I'd love to do it. It's something that I've been talking to my family about. So it's personal to me. I've been talking to friends of mine about investing in it, as well as family and investing in it. And it, my belief is that the system that Doug has set up here is something that makes it available to people who don't have the millions of dollars to start their own whiskey business. So with that, Doug, you know, as we've talked on and off on the phone, we've texted each other. I've texted you the drinks I make on Friday night, those types of things. I mean, I've gone through the innovation engineering system, but I have not applied it to building a product for myself. So this, I think this is a great opportunity to make this real. And as I started into it, I started to realize I got lots of questions. And so I wrote up a few questions, but you know, I think the basic question is, how do we go from zero to selling something?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, and it's a common, it's a great question, and I was excited to see your text message because it was like, yes, we might add to the craft movement because I will tell you, it is a. I just had my board meeting yesterday. I have quarterly board meetings because I brought in investors, and I'll just tell you in advance, it's a stupid amount of work, okay. But that you have to do, and it's mind-numbing, the paperwork you have to do with the government. It is just mind-numbing, but at the same time, you know, I then sat the investors down and I said, here, you want to see our new luxury product? And, you know, that we've been crafting and the lead investor took a sip and his eyes got big and he's like, oh my, that is amazing. And you know what, Trip? All of the other stuff doesn't matter. It's so cool to make your own thing, you know, and it's really cool when you can make great products. Okay. And we're going to have, as we talk over the next couple episodes, we're going to keep talking about that because the thing that really drives my energy and real craft companies. Okay, so you got people out there that are kind of marketing driven craft people. Mm-hmm. They're into just the branding and the bling and the flip it and it's a business. It just happens to be whiskey or vodka or gin or whatever it is, but it's just a business. And then you got people that are craft who really love the product, okay, and that are into it. Now, some of those are too extreme. Okay, they're what we call copperheads. You know, they like to play with their copper stills and screw with it. And there's no commercial sense. What we're going to talk about over the next 2 weeks is how to be craft yet commercial. In other words, which is sustainable.
Okay.
You know, because those real copperheads, the true craft guys, a bunch of them are starting to go out of business. Too recently, I just got calls on people selling off their stuff. They're done. They've gone bankrupt. And so we don't want to be 100% craft and we don't want to be 100% commercial. We want to be a healthy blend where the DNA of it is craft. And so you have pride, you know, real pride in your work of what you're doing and the products that you're offering, and you're bringing joy to customers. But at the same time, we're confronting the realities and the thing, you know, I mean, you can at least make a living on the thing. It's sustainable. You're not worrying about how you're going to pay the bills.
Got it.
Okay. So that's what this conversation is going to be about, which by the way, contradicts, there are courses online, there are places that you can take, and some of them, they tend to be one of the, or other, those extremes. They tend to be into the way deep down into the craft and the grains and the mash bills and that, or they're way off into the branding stuff. I'm going to try to walk you down through the middle, which is where I find success. But the energy for this comes from the product. It comes from the product, and then it comes into the branding and the packaging and in the service as to how you do it. And that's basically the DNA of how we're going to do it, which to me makes for a successful thing. So it is an adventure. It's the dream of every baby boomer.
Okay.
And millennial and Gen Xer we just did a study. 85% of young people said they would love to have a business of their own. And if I'd asked, would you like it to be a brewery or distillery?
Yeah. It goes off the scale, right?
one of the two.
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, I think one other thing we probably want to tell our audience too, is we go through this, these principles apply universally, even though this may be more looking at just the, you know, making a spirits distillery. We're walking them through, in essence, the innovation engineering system.
That's right. And it's how I start a business. It's how I start every business that I do. It's the principles are exactly the same. The steps are exactly the same. The details, a little different, but it's a good lesson. And in some ways, it's good. Even if you're not doing a distillery, this is almost even more valuable, because then you're not caught up in your own head. Oh, but my thing can't be this thing or that thing or that. You're just listening to the story, and you can get it. And the beautiful thing, it's a podcast, so you can listen to it again and again.
There you go.
If you can't sleep, you
can do that. And we'll probably do a content upgrade so people, you know, give them kind of the steps to go through, something they can download too.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So where do we begin?
Well, the starting place of all of these things is you got to set. And you can use a lot of different words for this. You got to set your vision, your mission, your purpose, your aim. I mean, you know, in the corporate world, they got all these triangular values and all of this junk. What we call it is, we call it the blue card, is what we call it in innovation engineering. And it's just a piece of paper that's blue that sets out the mission, the boundaries, and the why we're going to do this thing. Because if you don't have grounding in why you're about to embark on this, then you can get confused. And so we're going to set up the narrative as to why this is something to do, what we're trying to do. Then we're going to set the boundaries, both, you know, strategically, we want to do this. We don't want to be these kind of things, because we got to decide what we don't want to be. And then we're also going to define the tactical boundaries, okay? You know, you can make a decision. You can do what we're about to talk about, spending $50 million, $3 to $5 million, or $500,000, okay? That's a choice. That's a choice you got to make. And depending upon which you pick, you're going to be in one level or the next. And so, you know, real boundaries on that are really helpful. And then we're going to set some areas that we're going to go do some exploration, which will be the rest of the stuff that we'll start to put together.
Okay. All right. And just out of curiosity, Doug, as you've done these over the years, I don't think many people actually start with the things that you talk about. They're usually either just go and build a product, or they aren't talking about, you know, vision, those types of things. What are they missing? Why would they start? Why would you start with, let's say, the blue card and the, you know, the narrative and kind of the strategic mission and the boundaries and things like that, as opposed to just going and doing something?
Yeah, you're right. What they'll start with is the it,
okay,
but not the why they're doing the it.
Okay.
And so the result is they then fall in love with the it. And when the it doesn't work, they're stuck with it. So instead, what I want you to start with is the why you're doing it. What's your purpose? Why are we doing these things? And what's out in bounds and what's out of bounds?
Okay.
I want you to start with those things and then start to work on the its. And those its, you can then do 20 or 30. And you can change the idea. The ideas change. I mean, at my board meeting, one of the board members said, so I get it. You know, he said, so we've changed where we're going based on what we've learned. And we're a different company than what we are because we're pivoting. Now, it's not a big pivot, but there's a pivot that's happening. And I said, you're absolutely right. He says, but the mission's the same. I said, yes, the mission's exactly the same. He says, I get it. He says, this is awesome, you know, because we can keep changing the products. The products will change. The consumer's changing. There's different things that are happening out there. But the mission should stay because that's the thing that is your source of energy. That's what gets you up in the morning because you say, this is going to be cool to go do this.
Yeah, you know, and as you say that, it brought to mind that as you're filling out the blue card, that it's not as inflexible as an it is, so that you can update it and change it over time, right? I mean, as you learn, your blue card may change to some degree because you've learned, oh, well, that really doesn't work. And so you continue down that, as opposed to if you build a product, as you said, you're kind of stuck with it.
That's right. The blue card will still change. It will adapt, but it's going to give you a foundation that when you're pounding your head against the wall, you go, okay, why am I doing this? Okay, I get it. Yeah, let's go back to this. I wanted freedom. I wanted freedom from the corporate rat race. I wanted to create something for my family. I wanted to make a difference in this part of the community. There's an area of town that's, you know, a distillery helps revive a community space.
And
breweries and distilleries are what coffee houses were some time ago. You know, they start to form a place. I mean, in the early colonial days, those taverns were the places. And so your purpose for doing this is something that you have to think about, but it has to be authentic. What it can't be is, I want to do this to make $1 billion. If your purpose is to make $1 billion, you will fail. It's just the way it is. If your purpose is to make a difference in the world, whether in a community, it's hyper local, or in a space, or with a type of product, or in our case, with a technology, then you could end up making a lot of money. But it's the mission of the business that results in money, not money being the purpose of the business, if that makes any sense. I'm not against making a lot of money. That's fine.
Right.
Great idea. But it's the outcome. Money is the outcome. It can't be the purpose.
Okay.
I get in trouble with corporations about this. They say, our goal is to make an ROI of 700 and a billion percent with $18 trillion in profits. That's our strategic goal. I go, that's not a goal. That's an outcome. Mm-hmm. By what method? You know, are we going to do this? And that's what we're talking about here.
Okay. And so I think you've stated this before in some of the previous podcast episodes where you've talked about, you know, you've got to be passionate about what you're doing or the sustainability isn't there.
Intrinsic motivation has to come from within.
Okay.
It has to come from within.
All right. So help me through this. Where am I starting?
Well, the first thing you got to start with is you got to start about, and this is going to mess up some people's heads. Okay. So just bear with me here for a second. When it comes to setting this mission and boundaries of what we're going to do, it's an iterative process. So you may turn around and so you're going to, it's like playing whack-a-mole. Remember the carnival game, whack-a-mole?
Oh, yeah.
They go down. You're going to start one. You're going to start on a boundary. Then you're going to set that boundary and you're going to go, oh, wait a minute. With that boundary, I can't do that mission. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, but with that boundary, that mission is going to be lame. I don't care anymore. Okay. So I got to redo it again. Okay. So it's a juggling of these things. The first thing I would do is I would take a piece of paper and write, why do I want to do this? And fill up two pages. Just keep writing. Why do I want to do this? Why do I want to have a distillery? Okay. What is it that I'm looking to have? Why do I want to bother? Why do I want to commit my life and a lot of energy? Why would this be? What you can also do is write, and so write two pages, just fill two pages, typed or handwritten. You could also turn around and write, okay, the distillery's there. Why are you happy that you did it? Why are you so happy of what you've done? And related to that is, what is your life like now that you have the distillery? Give me a day in the life. What I'm trying to do is to project you forward so that you can see your future. Because if the, as soon as you can, and I use those words a lot. Somebody was poking at me the other time. You say, you keep saying, I can't see it. And I don't get what you're saying. I said, in my head, the minute I can visualize that thing, it happens. But if I can't visualize what the it is, what, where we're going to, then I kind of wander in the wilderness. When I can really visualize it, then when somebody says, do you want to do this? I go, nope. You know, I can just say no. And you know, we can see stuff. And let me give you an example. A subject we're going to talk about, cannabis, because you can't talk about distilleries today or alcohol without talking about cannabis, because this is a storm coming, and I respect anybody's personal policies on this, or they've got family issues, or they got what, you know, there's a lot of complexity in this. But the fact of the matter is the legalization of cannabis, whether it's CBD, the non-psychoactive, or THC, are coming, and they're going to have an influence on alcohol sales. It's just going to happen. And concurrent with that, there is a rising tide of young people reducing their alcohol consumption. And in some cases moving to CBD, THC, in some cases not. I don't care your policies. This is a reality that's going to happen. I had a very clear vision that we were going to be a whiskey company. We were going to just do whiskey. We have a patent that covers CBD, THC. And when I did investors, I said, that's out of bounds. Well, but we have the asset, so I'm just going to go sell the asset. At my meeting yesterday, I said, I've changed my mind. From experiments that we were doing in Canada, Colorado, and different places where it is legal, I'm now seeing a pathway. I can see a way for us to do something here. And so that is now inbounds instead of out of bounds. And I let them know, because it had been out of bounds. But new information, part of it is a lot of information, because I've been doing a project for a big multinational that has me looking at cannabis for them, because they want to look at it, but they don't want to be seen looking at it. You know, one of those kind of things, kind of a black ops job. And so I've gotten access to scientists and doctors, and I've been doing a, you know, an objective review, and the combination of that review plus some experiments that we've had, I've changed my mind. And so that used to be out of bounds, but now it's inbounds. But you've got to set those. It was not like maybe. I set it at the start. It was out of bounds. Now it's coming inbounds. So after you've got down what you're doing and why you're doing it, I want you to next start with these boundaries. What things are inbounds? What things are out of bounds? So strategically, I don't want to do this. Make a list of the things you don't want to do. I don't want to be a multinational, you know, low-cost spirits company. I'm not going to compete with the, you know, the Jim Beams of the world. That's not what I'm going to be. And don't just say, we're going to be a craft company that people love and we're beautiful and we're wonderful. No, no. What do you not want to be? You know? And then define what you don't want to be, and then define, and it, like in our case here, we defined early on, we said, we are going to be whiskey. We're not going to be rum. We're not going to be brandy. We're not going to be tequila. We're not going to be gin. We're not going to be vodka. We're going to be whiskey. Now, we did that in part because I had done some work, and I had found that for the same cost to make a rum, I can make a whiskey with our technology. But for the whiskey, I get $10 more a bottle than I can get for the rum. And I'm not justifying, it's just the way the consumers are. And so it made a difference. And so I set those boundaries. But even when I set them, I said, we're going to be whiskey, whiskey, and whiskey, because that's the hard thing to do. It's the king of spirits by far. I mean, it's 50% of brown goods. So you've got whiskey, and then add together rum, brandy, tequila, you know, et cetera. Okay, it's 50% is whiskey, which is spirit made from grain. Again, we've said this before, brandy is spirit, 40% alcohol, spirit made from fruit. Rum is from sugar, sugar cane, you know, tequila from agave, and it's from whatever source of grain they had, or sugars, basically, that they had in the region. So we were going to be whiskey. But I said, even when I said that, I said, we're going to be whiskey first. In fact, I put in the name that we do business as Brain Brew Custom Whiskey. Mm. Somebody said, will you do me rum? I said, did you see my name? I said, it's whiskey. Now, that said, I've also said that there will be a day where we will probably go into those other spirits. But first, we're going to make whiskey work. And we're going to stay, because, you know, I just set the boundaries. And I just decided that. And I could just as easily have said all spirits. But for me, the magic was making it happen in whiskey, because that was so much harder, and that excited me.
Okay, so with regards to my looking at this, are you going to try and steer me a certain direction that makes sense? Because, you know, I remember in one of the previous episodes you said, you know, you may want to start with gin and vodka because it's easier to make than while you're working on your whiskey. Is that kind of the mindset I should have as I go into it? Or,
well, first off, let me ask you this. Okay. Why do you want to do this?
Okay. That's a fair question. Narrative? Yeah, I think, one, you got me excited about it. and then I started, you know.
Listen to self. Don't
listen. Okay. To Well, no, I mean, I am a long time wine drinker. I mean, that's been my go-to thing. I love, you know, Cabernets, you know, from, you know, inexpensive to expensive. And then as we, you know, I've had whiskey off and on over the years and scotch, you know, scotch whiskey and good ones. And, you know, there is a difference, you know, as far as the taste goes. I don't know all the nuances, or I didn't know all the nuances. And then as we started talking, I was like, well, you know, this is a whole thing. This is, you know, and I like the taste. So, you know, from a craft standpoint, it kind of made sense. I started to look at, and you're probably going to ding me on this, you know, from a monetary standpoint, but just looking at it saying, geez, you know, Doug's created something here that's got early entry. But I also, I guess, then started to say, okay, well, why, asking the question you just asked, why, what's the sustainability of it, you know, from my mindset? And that is, well, I get a couple of things. One is learning how to do this. Learning is a big thing for me. That's not, when I say that, I don't mean it lightly, like, oh, I just like learning. I do like learning. It's like part of me. And then the second thing is, you know, I have a son that's in the craft brewing business and a daughter that's graduating from college. And it just seems like a great way to kind of pull a family together. And I've got relatives that live, you know, within 3 miles of me, you know, in every direction. And I was thinking, boy, this would be really cool to have something for the family. Now, whether that's good enough, you know, as you're listening to it, I don't know, but those are the kind of the reasons that it's attractive to me.
That is exactly perfect. Because what's perfect is what you want to do. Is that you have that. Now the question is to play this out and see, you know, realistically, is there a reasonable business that fulfills the needs of what you want to go do, you know? Mm-hmm. But you start with the why that you're going to do it. So then the boundaries. And some you may not know. And it's okay to put a question mark to say, I think this, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And all I care about is that you be honest with yourself. I mean, let's just start from product. Would you get excited having vodka and gin? Or do you really want to be whiskey, brown spirits?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, from a standpoint of, if the gin and vodka provide me a path to getting to whiskey. In other words, it's part of the learning, or it's an easier path to get some learning from in order to get to the whiskey. That makes perfect sense to me. I do drink gin. I don't drink as much vodka, but I can tell you people in my family do. I'm more interested in the whiskey. And I can tell you that my son is, my daughter not so much. So there's, you know, you've got different people, you know, involved. So as I look at the boundaries, you know, associated with the type, I'm pretty open with that. For me, it would be the whiskey that I would focus in on.
Okay, but if I go back to your the narrative of why you're doing this for the family, then it would seem like vodka and gin would be important to have there.
Probably. Yes.
You know, because of the family dimensions. And while you may be more focused on the whiskey side. Okay. So you said a bunch of things. So let me just give you just a quick blurt of some stuff. Doing vodka and gin so you can get to whiskey, I think is fool's gold for most people. I think that's a thing that a lot of distillers say. And I think it's a giant sucking sound of their life and energy force. And they don't love it. They hate it. They're doing it because they do it and they can't do it well. And it just doesn't work. I don't think that's a pathway that gets you there. The world does not need more vodkas. The world does not need more gins. Now, I'm going to put an asterisk beside that, okay? The world does not need vodkas and gins. There are not that many people that drink gin. And gin is a juniper-forward spirit, okay? Now, there is another thing called a botanical vodka, which would be the flavors like of gin, but without juniper being the primary taste. Okay. And I think there's a great opportunity for botanical vodkas, which is basically, quote, gin, but not, because it's not, because all gin is vodka with juniper. Okay. That's it. It's juniper flavored vodka. That's gin and sugar. You usually put 1 or 2% sugar in it. That's what gin is. And so the number of people that like a juniper forward drink is small. I mean, reality. But, and I think it's a fool's gold. Now, but doing it for the family, that changes that conversation. Because now making a vodka that people can make into cocktails that they can have, making a gin for those that like their gin and tonics, or botanical vodkas, so to have, where you can have a lot of creativity. I mean, this like opens up the creative juices, because different botanicals you can use. You can make amazing different botanical vodkas. Now you've got a real creative place that you can play. Then you can do stuff, which is wonderful, you know, as a place to play. But going down the route that you're going to make it from that and get to the other, I mean, people do this, and you can taste their stuff. It just isn't that. It just isn't that. And so that would be fine with me. That would be fine with me as a pathway to getting there. Because that's what you're going to need, is that direction. Okay. So we're going to do gin and vodka or botanicals.
Okay.
Okay. So that sets us up that there's some different ways to do that. And so there's a consequence to that, to both of those. So let me just give you some of those options, because that also then leads to a question that you have to confront at the front, which is, what number of zeros are you going to have in your fundraising?
Okay.
You know, how much cash are you going to do? And you've got to confront this cash issue at the front. Okay. You just got to set this number and, you know, how many zeros are you going to do? And yes, you could do this for very tiny zeros. There is a pathway to doing this whereby you basically just become a rectifier. You have no distillery. You have no facility. You basically buy stuff in from us or others. Sometimes even bottled, and you basically then just sell it to people. And you can do that for a couple zero, you know, for five zeros or you know, five decimal places, you know, in the, you know, $50,000, $100,000, you could do that. And there are people, we've got a couple people coming to us now who want to start a brand, and they say, I want you to make me 500 cases of this, and I'll go sell it. And that's a pathway. That's a pathway to do it. The next pathway is that you're going to have a facility, and you're going to serve consumers that from your tasting room, restaurant, depends on the laws of the state, and you're going to be distribute it in the local market, not in the state, but in the local market. And in the context of doing that, you've got a couple options. One option you have is you can get what's called an iStill, which we've talked about, which I think is the best. And they have a wonderful class that you can go to. You don't have to have bought it. In fact, people go to the class usually first. And going to one of their courses is really, really recommended. And they'll show you how the whole thing works. And they even have recipes to get you started quickly. And in particular, they can get you started with vodka and gin. Now, you can make vodka a couple of ways. You can do it from a mash from the grains, or you can buy what's called neutral grain spirit, NGS, and redistill it a bunch of times to purify it and clean it up and to make it even better. You can also, when you're distilling that, you can throw botanicals in and basically make either gins or, you know, herbal spirits, basically flavored vodka. And you don't need a very big one, and they're not that expensive. I mean, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. I mean, depending upon the size, I mean, all the way down to $10,000 for a little tiny one. And you can start doing it. Now, you can't do this. You're not allowed in the U.S. to become a moonshiner, unlike beer, where you can do that, which is a problematic. So you have to do it at a facility that's licensed, you know, to do that. But so you have to decide, are you going to start all the way from grain, which is a lot more expensive, a lot more learning curve, or you're going to start from spirit that you're redistilling. Basically, you're a finishing process versus from the grain. And that's a choice that you have to make. And really, that has to come from, I really want to do it, or I've got a partner that really wants to do that. You got to decide, because that's a different place of where you're going to spend your time. You can't do it all. You can't do it all.
So is there a pathway then, Doug? I'm looking at this kind of first go down this road, this which is kind of what I would call, I guess, outsourcing people. You make it, I'll sell it type of thing, versus the building a facility. Is there a pathway from you make it, then go to a facility? Is that one that makes more sense?
It is. Yes, it is. And people do that. If it was me, I would think long and hard about what I was doing. To be a craft place that has a facility, you need to have some level of DNA that you're doing the stuff. Now, that can range from I bring it in and I do the finishing, which adds the real flavor to it, which is fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine. The history is made. Most people are like that. I mean, most of your big whiskey brands are actually bought from MGP in Indiana, and they do the finishing. I mean, that's what most of the big brands are, you know, the big names that you see. I'm not going to throw stones at them, but you can look online. You can find out all the ones, the big, big names. They don't even make those products, and that's fine. But they do the finishing and the blending to make the taste that you get. And that's the value add that they provide. The artistry is there. You can go to the point of buying finished product that's to your specifications. So you designed it, and then you had somebody contract make it. That's fine. You can turn around and take the grain that you buy to do it. Or you can be like Jarrett, our partner in Canada, who's, I mean, if you want to say true craft, people say, well, if you're buying in the spirit, you're not true craft. Well, Jarrett will tell you, you're not true craft unless you grew the corn. He said, I grow the corn. He says, buying corn from a big industrial corporation, that doesn't sound very craft to me. Now, he's being severe. Mm. You know, on this. So these are all fine, and consumers are fine with all of these. And I don't have a political position on this. To me, the return on energy for my life, I'm not interested in growing corn. Okay. I'm not interested in running mash tanks. You know, to me, where the value is added is in the flavor and the finishing and that process. The maturation, the aging, you know, whether it's our accelerated aging or however you're doing it, putting together the mash bills. I mean, to me, that's where the artistry is. You know, the chef doesn't grow, you know, the cattle, you know, but they're still an artist. They buy in beef and then they do their artistry to it. So the question is, you know, are you going to be a farm or are you going to be a chef? And to me, the chef is what appeals to me, but that's up to each person. That's up to each person.
Yeah,
I mean, almost, you're in Indiana. It's a good farm state. You can go buy a farm and.
Put the kids out there on the tractor. Yeah. Well, part of me sits there and says, I mean, I guess what was in my head, Doug, was, you know, you would, I kind of outsource it at the beginning, try and, you know, learn, get a sense of kind of how you put it together, how I get something that, that tastes, you know, something worth selling, I guess. You know, you were talking about souvenirs, you know, at the beginning, in the last episode. Going from kind of, you know, help along, come up with something, like you have your tall stacks and your keelboat and your deckhand and all those things, but come up with something similar to that. And then as I get volume and learning, then start to move and maybe take on some of that stuff, you know, and then now we're talking about a facility, you know, and an ice still and things of that sort. Is that a worthwhile path, do you see, or do I have to make that decision right at the beginning that I need to use?
Well, I would make a decision,
okay,
but then be open as you get through the rest of it to see if you want to change it.
Okay.
So, but the answer is yes, that's a fine process.
Okay.
Jarrett and I in Canada, we're about to do the Nellie Banks and the Marco Polo.
Okay.
We're going to do two products that are exactly that. And I mean, and here's a guy who grows his own corn and he's doing it and he's doing it in part because we can do it quickly. And he wants to have the fun on that side because right now his time is sucked up so much on the other side that it's hard to do that. And so, you know, he's going to have both. You know, he's got the farm to glass, the true farm to glass. And at the same time, he's going to have stuff that we're making for him in Cincinnati. So, which is fine. Okay. Yeah, that works.
Well, I, you know, you've got knowledge and you've got 30 years of knowledge. And from my standpoint, it makes sense to kind of work with you, come up with something, you know, you make the initial and then at some point decide, okay, well, you've got enough volume here, or we want to kick you out of here or whatever comes first, I guess. And then start into, okay, what do I need from a facility standpoint? It just seems like it makes more sense because now I've got traction, you know, with a product. And now that I've got traction with the product, I would think going to investors would be easier. And maybe I'm completely wrong.
Okay, we're jumping ahead, but yes.
Okay.
But I'm just going to, I want to recognize though, that there are some people for you, that's what's right for you. And that's awesome.
Okay.
But there are other people who that's not what they want to do. They want to get the ice still. They want to play with botanicals. They want to do it themselves, you know, and because that's where they find joy. And I'm good with that too.
Okay.
You know, it just depends on, it's each person's perspective as to what they want to do.
Yeah. And by the way, I went out and I was looking at the ice stills. I think the smallest one is a new product they have is like the mini. It was like 3,000 euros, which I think it would be like $4,000.
That's right.
So
We have one of those.
Oh, okay. All right. So what else do I need to talk about? It looks like I'm going to have homework here.
Okay. So this has got you started.
Okay.
So now you've got this thing and the last thing I want you to think about. So money wise, then you're going to be a lot less money. The simple math is if you want to start a distillery with traditional aging and stills, you need $3 million minimum. That's Jack's or better to open. You got to have $3 million. And don't tell me you'll do it otherwise, because it's not going to happen. I mean, and we can show you the spreadsheet and the cash flow needs.
Yeah. I want to interject this because when I went back and I listened to one of the episodes, you had talked about, I was reading. And one of the things it said was, well, you could go into someone who's making whiskey and you could, you know, get a combination of their already aged whiskey type of thing. But I think you made a comment in one of the two previous episodes about that's not a good idea. Usually the product that comes out of it is bad. Is that?
Well, it's really tough
okay.
to age whiskey
mm-hmm.
and get it great. I mean, the people that are doing this have huge warehouses, which have all different temperature ranges, all kinds of different barrels, and they've got this huge pallet to do from. And you put away, you know, 10 barrels, 20 barrels, 100 barrels, you just don't have, it's like you don't have colors in your coloring box to play with. And you have to get amazingly lucky because there's so many things that can go wrong. Mm. So it can be extremely challenging to do that. So the last thing I want you to think about on the scope is I want you to focus on, are we going to be retail focused? Are we going to be venue focused? Are we going to be hyper local? Are we going to be statewide, national, international? And that may change as you learn more, but you've got to set some dimensions associated with that as to what you're going to do. The classic rule of thumb to be successful in this is the advice that is pretty much the industry standard from people that have walked this path is do your town first. Get successful in your town and then either decide that you're going to stay there and have a nice business or then go do another town where you aren't a local legend and prove that you can make your brands work in that other town. And when you've proven that you can work in a place where you're not, don't have the value of being a local company, that's when you've really shown that you have something that can go across the state, the nation, or the world.
Okay. And when you say do your town, what falls under that umbrella?
Selling the bars.
Okay.
Having it at retail. You know, doing that local town.
Okay. And if the retail, I'm not too familiar with all the liquor stores. I know some of them are probably locally owned. Some of them are Indiana-wide. Some of them are nationwide types of facilities. If I'm selling into, you know, a liquor store or liquor stores, does that automatically, do people go into the headquarters of a liquor store and say, I only want to sell it in these three stores in Fishers, Indiana?
Okay, it really depends. So you got to go figure out your state laws.
Okay.
This varies. In some cases, like in Ohio, as a craft guy, I can sell direct and direct deliver, even though the state owns all liquor stores. All liquor in all stores in Ohio is owned by the state of Ohio. They are agents. When you see one that has a name other than state of Ohio, it is a agent for the state of Ohio. Okay. And so it's all thrown through the state, but they allow craft guys to sell direct. So we can sell direct and deliver, but even so, the state still takes their piece of it. Okay. And so in some cases you have to have a distributor deliver the product, but you're still going to end up having to sell it. I mean, they'll list it and they'll have it, but the reality is you're going to have to be pounding the pavement there. And so you've got to check through your local laws in your state or country. I mean, this plays around the world as to what those rules are. You know, up in Canada, if you're a craft person and you're under a certain volume, you get really advantageous math on the margins that you make. You just do much better than others because of that. And so you really need to check that local math as to what the laws are.
And where, how do I do that?
This Google thing, it's pretty good.
Well, no, I get that, but I mean, what would I Google?
I would just, state liquor laws, how to start a distillery in Indiana and start some of those things.
Okay.
I mean, that's where you're going to, here, I'll look it up. Okay. Distillery rules in Indiana. More state. So you've just had a change in the laws.
Good or bad?
Too good. They're changing regularly. You can start small distilleries, serve samples in a tasting room, sell bottles of spirits directly to the consumer, sample our tours, pour them a cocktail. Oh, you have to wait 3 years before becoming eligible. You have to hold a regular distillery permit for 3 years before to qualify. That wait will now decrease to 18 months. So you're going to have to get into these things to find out what the rules are on how this is done.
Okay.
So it's coming. It's coming. By the way, to get a federal permit, it's going to take you 12 months anyways, if you had a facility. So this is something you got. And now if you can do it yourself by digging through stuff. There are also alcohol attorneys who specialize in alcohol permits and stuff who, you know, for an hour or two with them, they can walk you through the maze. There's also probably a distillers guild in Indiana.
There is.
And so one of those people would be happy to help you too, I'm sure.
So are you saying I can't sell anything for 12 months?
Depends on the laws. You'd have to check to see the way, but it could very well be the case.
Okay.
That could be the case.
All right. So even if you're doing it, I guess I don't understand how that works. You know, if I had you putting them together, I couldn't be selling them here in Indiana.
Depends. There may be a permit that you can, but you've got to figure out.
Okay.
Okay. Generally, you're still going to need a DSP, Distilled Spirits Producer Plant, from the federal government and then a local, but there may be a state way that you can do it as more of a importer instead of a producer. You may be able to do it that way too. So I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV. So okay. This is now, and you can't, our rule number one is don't put Doug in jail. So do not mess with this. Okay. Do not wing it on this. This is not something you wing. The federal and state governments have an intensity of enforcement on this because it's taxes.
Okay.
And so they're very intense on it. So you got to figure out what those rules are.
Okay. So these are some of the hurdles of things that I'm going to have to figure out.
That's right.
Okay. That's right. All right. Doug, we've gone through quite a bit today. We're 45 minutes into it. What can we look forward to in the next episode of this?
Okay. So Tripp, I know there's people out there, they're getting frustrated because they're like, wait a minute, all they're talking about is my mission and why I'm doing this and my scope. I just want to get onto it. But let me just tell you, folks, you got to have a foundation before you can build a house. And the time you spend thinking about that mission at the front is invaluable. So in the next episode, we're going to talk about developing your storyline. And this is the craft storyline of your brand, your product, kind of what this business is going to be. We're going to talk about making a functional prototype and a looks like prototypes, and trying to get some data on it and doing some initial math for your business model, just some rough math. And then in the third episode here, we're going to start to deal with the nitty gritty. We're going to start to deal with the investment decision, the investor plan, writing your distillery game plan, selling investors and getting the permits and building the distillery.
Whether you are an entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur, or part of an organization, the Eureka Ranch can teach you to start, innovate, and grow your business. The blue card discussed in this episode is available for download at go.drivingeureka.com/blue card, or click the link in the show notes. We'll send you what you need to start a company, build a product or service, or grow your company. The Eureka Ranch will light a path for you to follow.